This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
We're on to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is celebrating with a huge odds boost for new customers. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, you can get 56-1 odds on any team. Bet just $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps and get 50-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for 56-1 odds at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 years or older in Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789.
Ready to be hurt badly, but you kind of want to see it if they are. You don't want anyone to get hurt, but at the same time, there's a little entertainment value there.
Airing every day from
noon to 3.
Yeah, I mean, sure. There's a big earthquake, it's not that you want a high body count.
Whoa, what?
When there's a Category 5 hurricane, it's not that you don't want it to reduce to a Category 3, but you kind of wonder what kind of damage it'll do.
What is wrong with you?
I'm 1340 WKGN.
It's a little sick, I admit.
That's disgusting.
This is in our bloodline. This is in our DNA. Going back to the gladiator days. You don't want to see a fellow human mauled by a lion, but you kind of do.
I think you're a deeply disturbed person. Oh, wow.
Hour two kicking off in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour two headlines. Hit them with us, Cameron.
All right. Did y'all happen to catch any of the Nets-Wizards game a couple days ago?
Last night?
Whenever it was.
I can't say I caught a second of the Nets-Wizards, no.
Well, there was a controversial play that didn't get called during the game.
What was
that
play?
Where Nets assistant David Vanderpool was seen basically tipping a pass away. Ref missed it. And obviously, the Wizards were not happy with that. They were still in the game at the time, and yeah, he basically just like knocked the pass away, which led to a turnover for the Wizards. Well, he has been fined by the NBA for said interference. He got fined $10,000 for interfering with the live play, and then the organization fined him an additional $25,000 as well. For you know, basically what he did there.
Okay.
It's really funny just why he literally just stuck his hand out and just deflected the ball. but
I can't believe I didn't see that play.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. And Wizards players start going nuts like, did you not just see that? And
what do you say if you're him? Like, it's instinct? Like, hey, like the ball's close to me and I just jump. Yeah. I feel like you can't do that if you're a coach. Like, you would think that'd be even bigger.
Yeah, Kuzma was kind of talking like, I don't know why the coaches are standing up anyways. Like, right. It's like looking like AAU over there. Like,
the only other thing we've had happen like that I can remember, you know, even somewhat recent history is when Jason Kidd like purposely got his own player to bump into him so he could drop the cup and get a timeout.
Yep.
But like that wasn't even during play. That was like a timeout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this was mid-play. Ref somehow missed it, which it was very obvious. Like the ref's standing right next to him. I don't know how he didn't see it.
I guess there also was in the NFL was Mike Tomlin trying to chip Jones that one time on that kickoff return.
Forgot about that.
Speaking of fines, the New York Knicks have been fined $25,000.
For sucking?
For sucking and violating league rules governing media access. Mm. The Knicks refused to make Julius Randle available to the media following last night's game versus the Pelicans. And the NBA says you're supposed to give us your stars and we want to be able to have access to them and you can't protect players and we're fining you $25,000. Julius Randle has been a train wreck so far for the Knicks. He's getting booed at home. I understand why the Knicks didn't want him talking to the media after a 1-for-9 performance. My God, a 1-for-9 performance. Looks to be a team worse, -26 when he was on the court as they lost to the lowly Pelicans at home. Boos were raining down as they got blown out.
Wow. Oof.
Julius Randle fooled everybody last year.
Yeah, he did.
Got a big contract and went right back to sucking. He was down. You know, last year was a pretty efficient 24 points a game, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 45% shooting, 41% from three. This year, that's down over 5 points a game. He's 18.8 points per game scoring, 41% from the field, 31% from three, a full less assist per game. So, like, or full assist less per game. He has really taken a nosedive, and the Knicks fans hate him. And the Knicks, I guess, are trying to protect him from saying anything bad in front of the media. So maybe the $25,000 was worth it, but they passed out a fine to him.
Well, sticking in the NBA, DeMarcus Cousins is back.
No, I don't want to hear it. DeMarcus Cousins and his never-ending 10-day contracts and vet minimum deals. No, I'm sorry. I feel bad for him. They lost all his money due to his knee injury or his leg injury. I guess he tore his Achilles. Like, nope, don't want to hear it. He's where, in Denver? Is that right?
Yes, the Nuggets did sign him.
I mean, I guess he is the poorest man version of Nikola Jokic as possible. But
yeah,
I guess they're saying that, hey, like, our other center can't jump, and he's really good.
It's true.
So let's just get a backup that also can't jump. That's a decent pass.
Stay consistent.
Let's see what happens.
We already know Djokovic is not
Djokovic.
I don't know why I even got there. You know, he's not at the Australian Open for we kind of talked about his circumstances. He was the defending champ there.
Correct.
Well, the defending champ on the women's side, Naomi Osaka, has also been eliminated. She has been knocked out and basically walked as she was like leaving. Basically said, "I am not God." Or she said, "She is not God." When they kind of like asked her about like what happened, stuff like that. But yeah, she was making to her return, you know, after she kind of left the U.S. Open in September and hasn't really done much since then.
I don't want to say she's lost her fire and that she's not going to be great anymore, but it does seem like she's lost her fire. Like, maybe she can get it back, but like, after she lost, she was just like, you know, I'm here because I want to be here and because I find that it's fun for me. Like, she was trying to keep like perspective, and she's trying to be like, you know, I'm just here because I like playing tennis and I enjoy the process, but not so much as like, hey, I just want to go out and be a champion or be as great as possible. So, like, love it for her happiness. She'll still be able to make a bunch of money and sponsorship because she is just such a, like, charming person. But I do wonder if, like, her best tennis days are behind her, which is kind of wild to say already. But
yeah, but it's possible because, I think the love of the game isn't as strong as it
I just feel like it's one of the sports that, like, you have to be completely locked in and focused.
Yep. Absolutely.
I won't say you have to, like, love it. As long as you're still willing to like put all the extra work in and stuff, but like if you are like, hey, you know what, this isn't good for me, I don't really feel like doing it right now, like you're going to lose that. And I just think the margin for error is so small in individual sports that she probably just going to be kind of a quarterfinalist, semifinalist sometimes, and maybe wins another Grand Slam or two, but just not going to be the same person we thought she was going to be.
Mm. You hate to see it. I guess good for Amanda Anisimova that beat her though. Moving on.
Samsonova?
Yes, probably.
She's very good at holding serve.
Okay. Nadal did advance to the fourth round. Did lose a set, though. Kind of surprising. But I guess we'll stay in tennis. Show some respect. Top-ranked doubles team in the Australian Open, says to the crowd. As Nikola Mektic and Mate Pavic were very upset after losing to Nick Kyrgios, or that's not how you say his name. The guy we were just talking
Kyrgios,
about.
Kyrgios, right, maybe?
How you say his name. The guy that was, I told you, was out here hitting balls between his legs, Kyrgios. And, you know, they lost to his team in the Australian Open. They called them a nasty team. A nasty team. Obviously, they cheer for the Aussies, but it wouldn't hurt them to show some respect to all opponents, to other players, said Pavic. That's just how they are here. They're a nasty team to beat here, and that's it. Oh, I guess they call them nasty in a good way. They're more so mad at the fans more so than the players. But tennis is supposed to be like a gentleman's sport, I guess. So like, you're supposed to cheer all good shots, and the top-ranked doubles team in the world was mad they weren't getting enough cheers. Sad. Soft. Soft. Mm. Imagine saying that in, like, another sport.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, I know we're going up against, like, you know, your home guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, hey, clap for us, too.
Yeah.
We want to make shots, too. Imagine saying that. Like, imagine if Joe Burrow cries about that. Well, the Titans fans just really cheered hard for the Titans. Didn't really cheer for our plays.
Tennis, man.
That's, you summed it up. You summed it up. Tennis, man. Speaking
of men, Antonio Brown has claimed that multiple teams have reached out to him since his release from the Bucks.
Who?
Antonio Brown.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he's one of those guys now, but obviously with his last outbreak, people weren't sure if he's going to make it back to the league if we'll ever see him on the field again. Most people are kind of leaning no on that.
He's going to see the field again.
Yeah. He's claiming that teams have already reached out.
He's going to get some looks in the offseason, and he's still really good.
He also denies mental health struggles. He claims he doesn't really have anything there.
I don't know if he does. Seems like he does at times, but, sometimes
he... Just be emotional.
I thought he came out of the Bruce Arians thing and seemed, basically just to be passionate.
Yeah.
And, got emotional. Like, I don't think every person who is emotional automatically should go to mental health.
Yeah.
And Brown said he felt strong. Like, hey, I shouldn't play when I'm injured. And then they fired me, so I left. I stormed off of work plenty of times that way. Somebody tells me not to be there. That's mostly like a family thing, but me and my dad would get knocked down drag outs all the time. But you know what? Get your ass in the house if you don't want to work. I'd be like, all right, I'm out. Just leave.
Mm-hmm.
Go. You tell me to leave. You fire me. I'm gone. And he'd call me the next day. He'd be like, where you at? I thought you were coming to help me. Antonio Brown, they told him to leave. So he's like, you know what? Deuces, I'm out. Yeah. Family business, a little bit different than, being on national TV and having that meltdown. But Antonio Brown will get a call because he's still good at football.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's not going to get a big contract. Like if he just would have minded his business and been on his best behavior, probably would have gotten a pretty good-sized contract after his production at times this year. But
yeah, I think so. Hey, especially going to probably have a good playoff run just with, Chris Godwin being out.
Yeah.
Probably going to put up some good numbers.
Yeah. All right, go back to headlines. Let's go to break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Back on the program, before we get into some NFL playoffs, do have Tennessee news. Danny White spoke to The Athletic.
About being cheap?
I don't want to say it was about being cheap, but it's not that different than the conversation we had, yesterday about Tennessee and the NIL. And I know there's been some pushback about Tennessee not being cheap and Texas not outbidding Tennessee and all these things. Of course not. And, people are going to try to spin it positively for Tennessee. I thought Danny White's talk with Joe Rexerode and The Athletic was, I don't want to call it a PR piece. It's not that. To me, it was like Danny White giving him a platform to basically ask for money. It's kind of how it read to me. Like Danny talked about, basically the need for Tennessee to get their budget up. And Charlie, we talked about Tennessee's hiring, and we went through the salaries, and he was at what number in terms of coaching? We decided on what, 10th or 11th in salary?
He was tied for 10th. That was before the Pittman, so really tied for 11th with Drinkwitz.
Well, then in this piece, it points out that, Danny White points out, hey, Tennessee's budget in the last, full fiscal year of 18 and 19 before COVID was operating at the 8th best budget in the SEC. So not that dissimilar from, or not that far off, I guess, of what, they were paying their head football coach.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the 10th highest paid coach and you're the 8th biggest budget in the SEC, I guess that's what you are getting. $143 million compared to Texas A&M's $212 million, which was the second biggest in the country and biggest in the SEC. Texas is at $223 and coming to the SEC, obviously. So we talked about Tennessee basically needing to get some extra donors. 260,000 living UT alumni, Hayden, but only 12,500 active members of the Tennessee Fund.
Ah, because the big orange screw.
Did point out, though, that you have gained 141 new members of a club that gives at least $25,000 over 5 years, though. So he's bragging about that, happy about that. Talking about he's grown a little bit and, kind of gives the credit for that in terms of, going the sport by sport, seat by seat donations and how antiquated Tennessee's model was by just, basically letting football donors get all the sports.
Yeah.
Because, they made those changes where basically now you have to buy seats for the baseball game.
Yeah.
You have to make donations to the baseball. To a different fund for baseball versus hey, you have football tickets. We'll give you these baseball season tickets discounted as well.
That's the way it should be because, you want the other programs to be healthy as well, ideally. So it's the way it should be.
And he just said, we're leaving just a lot of money on the table is what he was saying by that. Hey, we're able to generate all this extra revenue while also lowering ticket prices for a vast, majority of people who aren't grandfathered in. So he talks about that. And then, you know, kind of got to the point where he's talking about, well, he did mention his party deck and didn't, again, make another plea where he talked about, hey, he, you know, every time I talk about this party deck, he says, I'm just reminded that it's screaming for a corporate sponsor. Ha ha ha. And parentheses they put, he laughed as he said that.
He laughed.
That it's like basically like, hey, we really need a corporate sponsor for the party deck, which does beg the question, how the hell we don't already have one? Like, how do you have this, like, new party deck? And Charlie, like, you've sent me pictures of the outline of it, and, like, they've talked about it, and it's going to be some real high-dollar seating. The social deck, the party deck, whatever you want to call it, it's like a premium space, and it's going to be a sports bar feel, and it's going to be up in the open-air concourse, and you're going to get to be up there with some elites, and, you know, you're basically paying, what, $2,000 per ticket for a full season, I believe, is the number?
Yeah, the and you're not getting a guaranteed seat.
Yeah, $2,000 for a pass into the concourse.
Yeah, $1,950 just so they can make sure it's under $2,000. It's not that expensive. Yeah. But open air concourse, private concessions, a sports bar like atmosphere with the large wraparound bar and drink rails to view action on the field. Modern space.
Now, and the write up for the social deck, it does say 1950, and at the bottom says each pair of tickets comes with one parking pass. So I imagine 1950 is the one ticket price, right? It'll be, you know, basically $3,900 for two tickets, yeah. But, you know, it does seem a little wild that we have this big party thing planned and we don't have a corporate sponsor for it yet. Like, that seems like something that, you know, should be working.
Seems like they're not doing anything over there. I mean, I feel like you can work hard enough to get a corporate sponsorship.
I feel like it should be a pretty easy sell.
Yes, yes.
Like, hey, we're going to have 90,000 people here, and it's going to be a hot spot, and it's going to be all the talk of the town this year. And, like, I don't know how much that would cost. I would think, you know, less than $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you see, like, that most, like, stadium naming rights things are around $1 million, like, you would think the party deck, you would think a company would be able to write that off pretty easily, like, $500,000.
Yep.
Hey, we're going to get exposed to – you know, X amount of million people if a game's on TV, and, you know, 90,000 people in person, and, you know, do social media impressions and all these things. You would think that'd be a pretty easy sell, but I don't know. But he did use this time to make a pitch to get that sponsored. But it did get to the point of NIL and, you know, Tennessee recruiting. And what they have in store there. And I did not necessarily love his answer, and I don't know what his answer says, but I obviously maybe it's just like, hey, it's on record, so an AD has to say this. But, you know, we criticize Tennessee and their NIL stuff so far and their packages and, you know, how they're recruiting and getting players paid.
Yeah.
And, you know, he basically just tiptoed around the answer. And said, you know, we want to win at a high level, obviously, but we have state laws and NCAA rules, so we want to win with integrity and be mindful to stay within the rules. To me, of course, an AD is going to say that, but at the same time, I'm wondering, what the hell are the rules? Like, do we even have any rules on this? It feels like there aren't any rules in the NIL stuff. It seems like teams are just kind of making it up as they go along because there aren't any rules. But when he started talking about the integrity and trying to do it that way, and then when, and as far as talking about, like, those who prove they have value in the marketplace, they're going to make some money based off the strength of this fan base. Danny White did go out of his way in this piece to, you know, go over top praising Tennessee's fan base. I do think that was a smart move by him. He did talk about how special this place was and how, you know, how the baseball run, you know, this past spring was his first real look into how passionate Tennessee fans are, especially for winners. And how he knows, you know, they're going to have the support to do everything they need because of Tennessee fans and how they're the best in the country. Now, I will say, like, you know, it's an article where he's also asking more people to step up and give money so that you have to kind of scratch their back a little bit. But I thought Danny White talking about, like, you know, basically letting the marketplace determine value, to me, is an AD response, and it's like the utopian perfect response of, like, Charlie, you said yesterday, that's how NIL is supposed to work. It's supposed to be for your hidden hooker who has value.
Right.
Not so much for your wide receiver from Wyoming who hasn't, you know, developed any value here in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Isaiah Neer, who switched from Tennessee to Texas and, you know, had done nothing in the marketplace to, or did nothing in the market to earn a place. at the table for money, other than like, hey, it's pay for play disguised as NIL.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, even more so, it's just with incoming recruits.
Right.
At least I would say maybe he does have some value just because he's been a successful group of five receivers. So like,
do you really think so though? Because like, to me, I'd never really heard of this guy. Now, granted, like I know that people watch Group 5 and he was a good, you said he was top 30 Group 5 player, but like the average Tennessee fan, which again is who, in a perfect world, I think the NIL is like, hey, you can partner with a local company.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is like he's in between because he's not the complete unknown of a recruit where
he is,
you know,
in Tennessee,
he has the
though,
star rating.
And he isn't nationally. Like he has no value, name, image, and likeness other than like.
Well, I think the value is in his projectability.
Well,
and
yeah,
that's and his projectability is feels more solid and certain than maybe a you know an incoming recruit,
but
because he's already produced elsewhere and the expectation would be that he would jump in and start
but
and produce.
But do you see what I'm saying though? Like I think what you're saying is he's proven as a good football player.
Yes.
But to me that's still but the value there is but that is that not basically paying for play?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like an in between.
Because again, I don't think Isaiah Neer, I mean I don't know how many Twitter followers he had before this courtship. I don't think he was a household name. Again, I hadn't seen him like on any draft boards or people talking about him. It was basically like, hey, he's a good football player and he would be good on this team. And when he got to Tennessee, would he have had value? Maybe, I guess. But not really like in terms of having earned it. It would all be based off of like, I want to give him a sponsorship to get him to my school.
Yeah.
It's not that different than you know, high school recruits from that perspective. Yes, he has mm-hmm. proven.
Yeah, we agree. I was just saying it's like more of an in-between thing than necessarily
I just think
completely like recruits. But we agree, and I was arguing semantics.
Yeah,
it's unimportant.
To me, the only difference is like you're paying for a player that you know is going to be good.
Right.
Rather than paying a freshman that you might
be a bust
yeah. and see transfer out and all these things.
Yeah.
Like, so to me, the idea was still like we're paying you to come to our school.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what ADs want. So maybe, maybe Danny White.
You think that could be the problem? That maybe he is treating it like intended to rather than using it like others are?
And maybe Tennessee feels like they can't right now. Maybe Tennessee feels like they can't because, you know, they're still kind of in trouble from Jeremy Pruitt doing the whole pay-for-play stuff. Like, you know, maybe there are people still looking around Tennessee that you have to walk on eggshells where other schools who haven't been in trouble don't have to. So maybe it's all connected. Maybe it's all connected. But, yeah. Yeah. Whenever you're talking about developing marketplace, I think that's the ideal answer, but I just think that's different than the reality of what we have. I kind of want a party deck seat, though. Not going to lie.
I think so, too.
I kind of want a party deck seat.
I was kind of looking at it at first. I was like, oh, this seems dumb. And then I read it a second time, and I looked at some of the renderings, and I was like, yeah, you know, maybe just for, like, a game.
I would like to try it. I would like for them to like give a discount on the alcohol there. If you're trying to make create a sports bar, feel like
yeah.
I don't really want to feel like I don't know about you, but I don't have fun at sports bars where they're charging me $15
absolutely
a pop.
Not.
Like
yeah.
I leave.
I have four TVs at home and a handle for $22 bucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like for there maybe a little discount there, but I don't know. I'm curious to see A, if they get a sponsor, how much money they'll get from that, but B, just how the party deck goes. And you know, he did talk about the baseball renovation. Says he thinks it'll be done, parts of it will be done by spring, so we'll get a different look of Lindsey Nelson. I haven't seen any pictures of
yet. I was about to say, are there any renderings that exist?
I haven't seen any. I mean, the season's close, right? I mean,
27 days, I believe.
It usually starts on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I think we were 27 days away.
Do we start immediately at home? Or is it – I mean, I know you do, like, a lot of preseason tournaments, like, in different places. Tennessee will go to Texas and stuff. But, like, we have some home games, like, in February, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Alcover guys. I think they started on the road at Georgia State last year, but I don't know who they started with this year.
But we're not – yeah, we're in here by the end of February is what I was getting at.
We are at home on February 18th.
Okay.
That's when we open our season against Georgia Southern. And we are pretty much playing every game at home from February 18th all the way until March 4th when you go to Minute Maid Park and play a bunch of, like, Big 12 schools.
Minute Maid Park is in...
That's Houston.
Okay. Houston.
It's the Shriners Hospital for Children College Classic with Texas, Baylor, and Oklahoma and Tennessee.
What is Milwaukee's park called?
No, that's not Coors. It's Miller. It's one of the beers.
Miller Park.
Miller Park,
yeah.
Okay. And you said what? for the Houston?
Minute Maid. Minute Maid.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
They're both indoors. They both got weird stuff.
Well, I just heard the M, and I was thinking, okay. Oh, I was like, why the hell are they going to Milwaukee? But, yeah. All right. Also, Danny did kick around the idea of putting a party deck in Thompson Bowling.
Huh.
I don't know. Where?
On, like, the side that doesn't have the suites on it, I guess?
I don't know. I don't know.
I normally don't like stuff like that at sporting events. Like, I don't like at least suites or club sections because it doesn't – you don't get, like, the complete feel of being at a game and being in the atmosphere.
I don't know how to do it, but, you know, other places have, you know, some places like this. But, like, the Hawks area, Cam, like, isn't it kind of, like, underneath – like, where's the Hawks, like, party deck? Like, they have, like, a place to hang out.
They
with,
have
it's
that
like,
one little, like, area. It's basically, like – it's, like, same level as the court, basically – with that, like, you know, where they have, like, that big logo where you can, like, use it as, like, a table, and then there's, like, the bars, I think, stuff, like, up in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, compared to where Thompson Bowling is, would that be, like, you know, basically think, like, where the band sits? Like, would that
it would be, like, if you took
the
out the student section there and, like,
seems,
put, like, a bar
yeah,
kind of thing
like something
there.
That people would
I'm trying
not
to
like.
Think areas I've been to or games I've been – the Nationals have –
baseball is like a lot
baseball's
easier.
Baseball's different.
But baseball is the easiest. Yeah.
Baseball's a lot easier.
So.
In the outfield, I mean, the Titans have bars and stuff like around too. It's like football and like the open stadiums are easy. Like where you
I
have
to walk
places.
The Preds have like a party zone that's kind of sort of like a hybrid fan zone, but not really.
The Thompson Bowling thing just kind of caught me by surprise just because I just can't really picture it in there. And that is something.
I would love it at a baseball game.
For sure. Like, yeah, I mean, the party decks are where people want to sit for, like, baseball games.
The
part,
like, I don't think I'd want to go to a party deck for a football or a basketball game, but if you gave me a party deck in Lindsey Nelson, I would buy season tickets to that party deck. And
so everybody's always fighting over, like, the porches and stuff.
Yeah.
But for football, I feel like it wouldn't be, like, that bad. For like non-conference games and just like kind of like the
Tennessee Tech
crappy games, but like
you go watch the good game and get trashed at the Tennessee game.
I don't know. I don't know how like I don't think I want to be like in the Danny White's party deck for the Florida game.
Right.
Like,
no, it'd just be a place to be seen.
Can we just call it that?
Danny White.
Danny White's party deck.
You sponsor it, Danny.
There's the sponsor. Yeah.
Yeah. You sponsor it. Let's go to break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
Winning season returns at mybookie.com, and it's time.
You are now listening to Run the Jewels. Back on the program. All right, looks like we got the Giants have hired their GM.
Yes.
Joe Schoen, Bill's assistant GM. Is now the Giants' main GM. Does that mean they're more likely, I guess, to go ahead and get Brian Flores done? Because it does seem like it's still trending that way. And Flores is like, I'm not signing until you get a GM. Now they got a GM. So I don't know if there's like any ties between Schoen and Flores, but it does look like that might expedite the process.
Yeah, I think I saw Flores and one other person. I want to say it was Dan Quinn was the other person. They're like, it probably comes down to these two guys or who they're pushing for now.
I saw where Dan Quinn was getting a lot of love in Minnesota.
Yeah, there as well.
I don't know. I don't know how to think about Dan Quinn. Like, I don't want to be unfair to him. I know that we kind of joke about, like, coaching retreads.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once upon a time, Bill Belichick was a retread.
Yeah.
He, like, flamed out in Cleveland. We had Pete Carroll was a retread twice. Over. Yep. And, you know, he won a Super Bowl. And Andy Reid was a retread. He got fired from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. All those guys have won Super Bowls. Obviously, like, Belichick's won the most of them. But, you know, Carroll and Reid have been really good. I know I make fun of Carroll a lot, but, like, you can't argue with, like, how many wins he has a season.
Yep.
Sometimes a retread works, I think.
Yeah, it can. It can.
So, like, Dan Quinn, like, it's...
I will say from what I saw from him as the defensive coordinator, he looked like he did learn from some of his mistakes because he played a different style of defense than he had really played his entire career. He was, you know, mainly just doing a lot of that, like, cover three, just keep everything in front of you.
He evolved a little bit.
Yeah, so, like, it seemed like he learned it to an extent to change stuff. He played a lot more man and stuff this year, but...
Now, I know I gave some, like, exceptions to the rule, and, like, you could point out, like, yeah, but what about Mike McCarthy? You made fun of him, and that's right. Not all retreads work. Some retreads are going to be losers. Yeah. Both places. And Mike McCarthy even sold the the Cowboys on, like, hey, I took a year off football and I studied analytics and I studied on, like, what I'm supposed to do. And, like, he still found a way to, like, mismanage time and still make the same game management mistakes that he always made. So, like, sometimes retread just is who he is. But I just don't know how to feel about Dan Quinn. I know Todd Bowles' name getting thrown around, too. I'm actually fascinated by him because, you know, if you win 10 games with the Jets, like, you deserve some respect, in my opinion.
Yeah. I like
10
games. Bowles a lot. Yeah, I think Bowles really deserves a job. I think the good thing about Quinn, if you were to hire Quinn, is he's a player's guy. I think the players will love him.
Sure.
So I think that's why you'll get probably a couple good years out of him, or decent years where he at least, you know, looks competent. But
Dan Quinn or Kellen Moore, like, both those names are kind of linked to Minnesota. One's a retread, one isn't. Like, I don't know who I'd feel more comfortable with. I think I'd probably feel more comfortable with Dan Quinn.
I agree. Just give me the guy with some experience that actually – one at, you know, a high level.
I just don't know if Kellen Moore is going to be a superstar. Like, I don't get Sean McVay vibes from Kellen Moore.
No, like, that offense doesn't, like, scream, like, innovative or, like, you know,
it just screams like
that.
We got a lot of
high-dollar players. It's like, hey, we played the Giants twice this year. And have.
And that's what I was going to say, though, is, like, how much credit do you give Dan Quinn for, like, I feel like they had a pretty easy schedule, and they didn't play that many explosive offenses this year.
Yeah, I mean, that might be it. You might be right. I mean, he did have two All-Pros, but you might say, like, hey, Micah Parsons would have been All-Pro with anybody.
Yeah.
He's going to make him look better. I don't know how much credit to give Dan
Quinn.
And
the thing about Diggs, like, we talk about it a lot, like, most interceptions, but also, like, most yards given up by
him. He wasn't actually good,
But, like, the Cowboys' defense was a lot better this year than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
that's not the reason they lost the playoff game either.
Right. And I think Cam's just looking for, like, maybe he wasn't as stubborn as he was, like, with his scheme. Mm-hmm. Like, he actually, like, did some different things.
Yep.
But I would say, judging, like, Dan Quinn, you're not judging him as much from his defensive coordinator stint, you know, with the Cowboys as you would be with his head coaching stint with the Falcons. That I think it's fair to say, you know, from the outside looking in, Cam, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like Dan Quinn's front office hurt Dan Quinn, the coach. I know he wasn't in control of, like, personnel, but it seemed like the Falcons just whiffed on a bunch of draft picks and, like, never could figure out the salary cap.
Yeah, like, when he was good
too.
And
like,
had the success.
I know, like, you know, they had a bunch of injuries to their their good defensive players, too.
Yeah, 1 year, it was just riddled with injuries. I mean, I think you kind of just got in that mindset, like, oh, we kind of suck. I mean, that carried into the next year where, you know, you kind of carried that over, and Dan Quinn was basically done there. But, yeah, Dimitroff didn't really help him out. And like you said, we missed on draft picks, like, where they struggle the most in the trenches. Just completely whiffed pretty much the entire time frame he was there. And, you know, the year that they made the Super Bowl run, he had a lot of good young players where you actually had hit on your draft picks. And
also,
you know,
had a really, like, brilliant offensive coordinator with Kyle
which
Shanahan.
Helps, but, and, I mean, I think that's part of – you know, you got to kind of look at it for head coaches of, you know, getting a good coordinator. Like, you can show he can do that. I mean, even like Raheem Morris being on the staff, like, I think people hold him in a decent regard now, or you know, still do, as far at least being a defensive coordinator. So I think it's a good sign that you can see that he, you know, he has at least somewhat of an eye for talent as far as who he could bring in and possibly help the team as a whole. But first coaching stint, too, you know, maybe he learned some stuff from, like, what he has to do as a head coach. So I don't know. I think I'd be more comfortable with Quinn than Kellen Moore, though, for sure.
The reports out of Las Vegas heating up for Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh to Vegas to take over the Raiders.
The Raiders.
Another retread, but another one that I think is a good retread. Like, I think like, I know Jim Harbaugh, the college coach, didn't necessarily achieve everything they probably should have at Michigan. But Jim Harbaugh, the NFL coach, still won 70% of his games and went to a Super Bowl and then lost another NFC championship on the last play.
Yep.
Have they hired a GM yet?
They have not. And Harbaugh apparently is okay with not being, like, in complete control of the roster. Like, you know, as long as he, like, has a GM he trusts and, like, you know, gets some input, like, in the meetings and stuff, which I think is the best, like, kind of route to go. You don't want a head coach to have full power. You want him to have a GM, like, kind of doing his bidding.
Mm-hmm.
But him just being a part of the evaluation, how they're going to fit schematically and all those things. But
apparently,
I didn't really fully realize, I guess, that Harbaugh was a former Raiders assistant. He was their quarterbacks coach in, like, 2002, 2003. And he also apparently met his wife in Las Vegas. So, like, he's a part
really?
Of
it. Really? That seems like an interesting place to meet a wife.
Yeah, and he said he's, like, at a coach's clinic or something, and she was, like, a real estate, like, at a convention. Or like, they met at some convention. And
selling property. That's awesome.
Said he asked for her number, and she gave it to him, and then he says he called 10 times, and she picked up on the 10th time. She ignored him 9 times. And
you
then
hear that, guys? Never give up.
I always say that every love story is, like, one step away from being, like, really creepy. Like,
yeah.
Called me 9 times, stalker. Yeah. I answered the 10th, and now we're married. It's true love, but like,
yeah,
the first 9 times, that's pretty creepy, Jim. Like, why are you still calling?
That is a little. I mean, that makes sense for a guy that slept over at a kicker's house and climbed trees with like a wide receiver.
Hey, nothing's wrong with climbing trees. But yeah, okay. Look at Jim.
I really want the Raiders to keep Bisaccia.
I think that ship has sailed, and like I said, I think all signs are pointing to Harbaugh, although he's still linked to
which he's a better hire.
Right,
he's a better coach. He would be probably one of the only coaches on the market I would choose over Bisaccia if I were the Raiders organization. Will be interesting to see if it's a little bit tough at first for Harbaugh to, you know, completely win over his players in Oakland, depending on how many people come back from this past roster. Because in the past, I guess, week since the Raiders have been eliminated, you know, first you had Derek Carr speak passionately on behalf of Bisaccia, saying that he wanted him back, saying they wanted to run it back. You had Max Crosby, you know, really come out and speak strongly, saying that they don't want to play for anyone else but Bisaccia.
That's nice of them to do, but I think that whenever, like, we see this all the time in college and other NFL, like, where the interim at least does a little bit and has the love of the players, like, if you hire a good coach, they'll buy in.
I think they will, too.
If they hire Kellen Moore, if the Raiders tried to, like, run Kellen Moore in there, I think you might have to worry about that. But if you bring in, like, an actual winner that has, like, a track record, like Jim Harbaugh, I think it's easier to swallow.
Right. You just got to – yeah, that's what I think so, too. You just make – you got to make sure you please Derek Carr if you're keeping Derek Carr because, you know, whatever you feel about him, he is kind of the glue in that locker room.
And if I'm Carr, like, I'd look and say, yeah, I'd like to be coached by this guy who's been pretty good at quarterbacks. And apparently, like, yeah, I was reading about it, and, like, Jim Harbaugh apparently just has a good relationship with Mark Davis and, like, loved Al Davis and speaks glowingly about – says, like, there's not a day that goes by in his life that, like – he doesn't use something that, like, Al Davis taught him.
He just has, like, a Raiders poster in his bedroom.
It's basically like there's not a day that goes by in my life, like, either coaching football or, like, love and dealing with my kids that, like, I don't learn something from Al – like, I don't use something I learned from Al Davis. Like, just talks about how he's, like, one of the most, like, influential people in his life. So it does seem like this is going to happen in Vegas. If I was betting, I would bet Harbaugh to Vegas, just reading some of those stories. It just seems too perfect.
Do you think he would keep Bisaccia on as special teams coordinator?
I was going to say that would be a pretty good move. At the same time, I feel like it's hard. Like
you don't know.
I don't think you can.
Right? Yeah, you usually can't do that. Like it happens sometimes. Like I guess Ohio State didn't. I mean, they kept Luke Fickell, right? Like Luke Fickell was their interim head coach after Jim Tressel got fired, and then he was Urban Meyer's defensive coordinator, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it could happen, but like that was Luke Fickell, who at that time was probably what, like 32 years old. I mean, he was young. I mean, he's not even old now. So a little bit different when you're Bisaccia and you like feel like you've proven it and you like deserve the job. And you have the players who love him. Like maybe if you made him like a actual, I don't know if he's an offensive or defensive guy, if he could do that, or if he's just strictly special teams. I know he's a special teams guy, but like if you gave him like a promoted title, maybe, but it just seems like you can't really do that. You can't.
How did he even end up as the pick for the interim coach?
He's a guy that's been, you know, linked to
that's
jobs
usually
for a
what
long
they
time.
Do, though. I feel like the interim coach will do like some non coordinator, so like the coordinator can still do what they do during the game.
Right.
You're right. I wonder if he'll get any other job interviews. I'd rather have Bisaccia than Dan Quinn.
What is your love affair with him? What was it?
He
about
did one of the best coaching jobs in the NFL this year.
I mean,
just to hold that team together.
It was the first time since 1971 that a team had fired a coach midseason and made the playoffs.
Yeah, but they didn't fire John Gruden for performance. I think that's a little bit different.
Still like, impressive.
I mean, sure, but again, like I think like John Gruden, I don't know if he'd have got this team to 10-7 or not. But like, it's not like they fired him because he was sucking, and then all of a sudden, like the team rallied behind Bisaccia. Like they were what 5-2 when Gruden got fired? Is that right? Or like, they were 5-2 at one point, were they?
I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't say – I thought they started the season 3-0 and then maybe were 5-2.
I think there were something like that because I'm pretty sure the Chargers were in first place in the division and they were in second, and the Chiefs were third at one point.
So a little bit of an
Chiefs
asterisk
were last
there.
At one point.
A little bit of an asterisk for me like when it comes to like, him you know, breaking that record.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think it makes the Raiders a more appealing vacancy because you are like not firing somebody that you know went 2-15. You're taking over a playoff team that has at least some pieces. Let's go to break. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.
Walk on.
She hates me deep down. I know she does. She wants to erase me. A couple
back on the program. Let's get a chili check. No, it's so stupid. Let's not do that for the Titans. Hayden, how you feeling? Still nervous?
Yeah.
Let Charlie talk you into not being nervous.
Wait, what's a chili check?
No, it's just a damn...
Coach Eckler.
Yeah, damn Eckler.
Oh.
Chili being hot.
I was just thinking about, like, I don't know what I was thinking. I was thinking chilies, maybe. Like, 2 for $25. I'm hungry, I guess. Hayden, here's the deal. Me and you, we apparently are the same person, sports-wise.
Fandom, yes. Mood about your team, no.
No, I mean...
Pessimistic versus optimistic.
And we've been hurt before, and, you know, we've obviously experienced more happiness than most, too, with the Nationals and the Heat, but we know Tennessee teams specifically, they will hurt us. And it's hard to keep coming back to it. It's hard to trust it, but you can trust this Titans team. You can trust Mike Vrabel. You can trust Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, every member, all of the 91 players that have played this season. You can trust all of them, even the ones that are on practice squads for other teams, all of them, whatever. You can trust this Titans team. And, you know, Mike Vrabel, first of all, 8-0, 8-plus days of rest. Secondly, Joe Burrow has been at his worst this year when teams successfully are able to pressure him without blitzing. The Titans are probably the second best team in football at pressuring without blitzing. That's a recipe for success. You know, this Bengals team, they were fun, they were flashy, and they're a team that's going to be around for a while, but playoff football is different. Playoff football is won at the line of scrimmage. The Titans are built to win this game at the line of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. Both sides of the ball, they have the advantage at the line of scrimmage. They are a team that's built for the playoffs. They're a team that are as healthy as they have ever been this entire season. This is the healthiest they have been. Nobody ruled out. And probably the next hour and a half, we're going to get a little buzz on our phone. Derrick Henry activated from the injured reserve.
Charlie's come a long way from Monday when he was crying about how scared he was. Hayden, what are your concerns for the Titans versus the Bengals?
I think they have a better quarterback. I think that's
how much better?
I don't know.
How much better?
I think Joe Burrow's top 10 quarterback in the league.
Where's Tannehill come on your list?
Probably 13th, around there. It's not that much of a difference, but the positives are that I think we have the head coaching advantage. So, I mean, that's a point towards the Titans. The other concern I have is the secondary a little bit. I mean, Byard's played out of his mind this year, and Fulton's played well, but they have three solid wide receivers, and they're going to push the ball down the field, and they also have a good running back. So
I'm not worried about Joe Mixon at all.
I'm not worried about Joe Mixon. And Jackrabbit Jenkins, I actually, is a guy I have a lot of confidence in. You know, he's the traditional Nashville free agent. You sign him, he disappoints, people get mad. People get so mad they quit paying attention, then he starts playing really well. And people just don't even realize it. He's played very well since pretty much the midway point in this season. So I feel confident in our secondary. I'll be honest, the only thing, or I guess the main thing that does worry me about this matchup is Elijah Molden and Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd does not ever get enough credit for as good of a wide receiver as he is. You know, you've seen Elijah Molden play really well this season. You've seen him have some rookie struggles at times, too. And Danny Amendola, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't read too much into a poor defensive second half against the Texans, but Danny Amendola did have his way with Elijah Molden a little bit, and Tyler Boyd is certainly a physical but skilled slot receiver. You wonder how much of an impact maybe Buster Skrine has as that fourth corner, that dime corner. You know, maybe at some point he's playing more than Elijah Molden in specific coverage situations. I don't know, but that is the one area for me that I go,
Okay, well, if you're worried about Tyler Boyd, then I don't.
However, I don't think that's enough to
Tyler and Boyd.
That's not enough to like pivot a game.
Tyler Boyd's going to carry them to the AFC Championship.
No, I don't think that's enough to pivot a game. I'm just saying that is one area where I do think that strategically they have us.
Cam, how good do you think Burrow is? Hayden called him top 10. Which
I think he's 9 or 10.
Okay.
Because
I've been trying to figure it out myself, exactly he ranks. Like, at times, he's looked really good, mm-hmm. You know, against Kansas City. I thought he looked average, and then, like, Jamar Chase starts running around after the catch, he looks, his stats look really, really good, and then all of a sudden he looks really good, and then You know, I'm thinking at the end of the game, I get down to the goal line, and he can't, you know, get them in the end zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think penalties, there's a lot of recency bias with, like, ratings on him at the moment. I think he's a top half quarterback.
Oh, he's top half, for sure. Like,
that's not
top
a question.
10, I don't necessarily disagree with what Hayden's saying, having him at 9 or 10. It says, I've seen some people talking about him this week as if he's, like, number, like, in the top five. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't, sudden, I couldn't, like, I can't put him up that high, not just off what I've seen the last few weeks. I need to see him do it more consistently.
I know some may think of him as a young quarterback. He's only in year two, but, like, he's the same age as Josh Allen.
Yep.
He's 1 year younger than Patrick Mahomes. Like, he is there, like, you know, think of, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is, you know, what, on the doorstep of going to his third straight Super Bowl and fourth straight conference championship?
Yeah.
So, like, he's not, like,
he's a little behind.
Yeah, think about, like, how old, like, Mahomes was whenever, like, he was doing those things. So, like, Burrow's not, like, young and inexperienced. Like, he is a grown-ass man that should be, like, hitting his prime at the age of 25.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quick math, I had Burrow at 9 and Tannehill at 10.
Okay.
Quick math. I could have obviously missed someone.
I would say I would probably rank them pretty similarly as far as, like, if I was doing, like, a top quarterback ranking. They just do different things. Like, they're asked to do different things for the team. They both do it, you know, pretty good for, you know, what they're asked.
I'm not asked, you know, I think most people are probably going to, you know, say it's laughable that we would be saying that Tannehill was even close to Burrow in terms of quarterbacking, and that's fine. Like, I think Tannehill's done a lot this year to kind of prop up the team, and I think, you know, he's going to have his full assortment of weapons this weekend, and I think you're going to see the best version of him. And I have – the best way I can put it is, like, you know, I know people don't really give Tannehill his credit, and that's fine, but, like, as a fan, I have the utmost confidence in him. Like, I think he's going to play well, and, like, whenever he has the ball and has to make plays, I think he can do it. I just didn't know, like, you know, is Burrow enough? Because to me, if the Bengals win, it's because Burrow has just gone crazy. And Burrow's been a top three, top four quarterback, and I was wondering if you guys felt like he was a top three, top four quarterback.
It seems like there was a lot of conversation last year and then even coming into this year about Joe Burrow's arm strength. Joe Burrow missing some of those NFL throws on the sidelines and some of those downfield throws. And then all of a sudden, you know, his receivers are incredible. You add Ja'Marr Chase. You know, he does throw it down the field a lot, but he throws a lot of short routes, so they take a long way for him, and those conversations completely go away. You know, I still do think he lacks some zip at times and he underthrows balls at times. I think that holds him back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have the strongest arm coming out of school, was still able to go number one. I'm not going to act like I've watched every Joe Burrow snap or, you know, even most of his games, but, like, when I've watched them on TV, it doesn't seem like he struggles making any of the throws. To me, the questions I would have about him was whenever I felt like he was having a bad play, it would be, like, just bad decision-making. I still can't get, like, the Chicago game out of my head. That he basically single-handedly lost, you know, throwing that pick six to the Bears and throwing three interceptions and, you know, letting Andy Dalton, or I guess it was Justin Fields even, beat them in week two.
If you just look at some of their losses, I feel like teams beat them in a similar way that the Titans are set up to beat them.
To me, the key is going to be, like, you know, I know that, like, you know, there's numbers out there that show that Foreman can do a lot of what Derrick Henry is doing and all that, but, like, to me, I think the Bengals are soft up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Jesse Bates as a safety is, like, not one that really likes contact. Like, that's pretty much all. Like, every smart person I've read or, you know, listened to this week has just talked about, like, he doesn't really like hitting.
Jesse Bates is liking hitting away from being the best safety in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah.
But, like,
he's really good.
Against
coverage-wise.
Against the Titans, you got to like to hit. Like, if you're the safety, you have to be able to come up and tackle Derrick Henry when he gets to the second level. You got to be able to come up and stop A.J. Brown whenever, you know, the play action gets him on that second level behind the linebackers. And, you know, the Titans have two guys with a proven track record of being able to play physical and create big plays with, you know, A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, Julio ain't necessarily small. Like, I know he's been a little banged up and hasn't been the same, but, like, Julio is also a problem across the middle trying to tackle him. So I do think the Titans are going to be too much for them, just kind of across the middle and getting to the second level.
God, you got me so fired up, John.
Hour three coming at you. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.
Apex